south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, here's something that definitely needs talking about. Don't think I've ever really gone into detail on this one. So let's start out with an email that kind of says it all. It says, "Hi, Johnny. If possible, could you do an episode on fitness and sports in Latin America? I'm particularly interested in the costs of things like gym memberships, personal trainers, etc. I've always been interested in boxing, and you know that's still a popular sport in Latin America. Are boxing gyms available for fitness-minded people that aren't interested in competing? Are they safe for gringos? Do you have to go to a bad part of town to find them? Those are the questions I have." Then he says, "I've used a personal trainer in the past and would love to continue with one, but where I live, the rate's around $60 per hour, which is way outside my budget. I assume the price varies across countries, but what's the average rate going down there in Latin America? Hey, John, thanks for the info." And that comes from longtime listener JW. Then there's this email on basically pretty much the same thing. And by the way, I don't just get a few emails. The other day, I deleted 8,000. And probably a good 100 or so of those came from Nigerian princes offering to share their millions with me if I only fork over my bank account numbers. And you know, when you get those Nigerian emails, you gotta wonder who taught those guys how to do an introduction to an email or a letter. I mean, they almost always start out something like, "My dearest beloved one," or something that sounds like it's out of a Charles Dickens novel. By the way, I actually spoke with a guy from Nigeria, and he said, you can see a lot of rich Nigerians wearing all kinds of bling and stuff, and they're doing those scams. They're kind of the heroes of Nigeria, if you can believe that. And as for me, I think anyone who falls for one of those scams deserves it. So anyway, I do get emails. And this one, also on the sports and fitness theme, says, "Hey, Johnny, I'm a tennis and racquetball player. Play almost every day. And I was wondering, if I moved to Latin America and rent in one of those gated, guarded communities you talk about, I assume like guarded communities here in Cincinnati, where I come from, they have tennis courts, pool, a small gym, and a pavilion for social activities, right? I understand it's the same in Latin America. Sounds good on paper, but my question is, with all you say about the lack of maintenance in Latin America, if I rent in one of those nice communities, are they going to do the upkeep on the tennis court, the swimming pool, and the common facilities, or is it going to be nice, shiny, spick and span while new, but eventually kind of look like one of the Hispanic neighborhoods here in Cincinnati? You see, Johnny, I'm a detailed guy, even kind of anal, and I don't want to rent or buy in a complex where things aren't maintained to decent standards. Oh, and what's the golf course situation like there in Latin America? I know there are wealthy people in every country in the world, and therefore every country, even communist countries, have golf courses and clubs. As for me, I'm a weekend golfer and have a golf club membership. And of course, the more you pay for your membership, the nicer the club and the course. That means fewer people, less hackers, and the easier it is to get on. And with less use, the greens and fairways are always nicer too. So Johnny, I know you reported on the fact that in Antigua, Guatemala, there was a first-class PGA course that was destroyed by a volcano. So I guess I'm not moving there anytime soon. So I guess I just need the lowdown on the sports and leisure activities and what to expect. Hopefully it's a lot like or at least similar to what we have up in the States, so I don't have to adapt too much. Though I understand it's going to be a hell of a lot hotter on the course down there than it is in Cincy. Though I suppose, like anything, to get exactly what you want, you have to do it yourself. So maybe I'll live a little bit outside a big Latin city, buy a half acre or so, build a house, and put a tennis court in myself. Of course, Johnny, I probably never would be able to afford doing that up here in the States. And even if I could, I could never afford the help to do the upkeep. Because, you know, having a tennis court of your own does have its associated maintenance and upkeep costs. And as I understand it from your broadcast, you can pay a person $15 or $20 a day to do gardening, maintenance, and upkeep, etc. And though I don't doubt that it's true, I really have to see it to believe it. All I can say, Johnny, is you and all your expat friends must really be living large. To tell you the truth, when I listen to your shows, a lot of times I'm jealous. I can't tell you how much I dream of being a part of that. Then he says, in 2 years, I'll be retiring, and I'll get about a $40,000 a year pension. And to be honest, Johnny, it really does seem like a pipe dream to be able to live a first world life somewhere in Latin America, of course, and have a full-time maid and gardener or maintenance man, too. I still can't believe it's possible on something like 40 grand a year. I'm one of those guys, I have to see it for myself, Johnny, so I am coming down to get some boots on the ground. Then he finishes off by saying, thanks for the shows, Johnny. I've listened to every single one of them. Rudy from Cincinnati. All right, Rudy, thanks for that one. A lot of things there to address, but let me just address the pension and the 40,000 bucks a year thing first. Now, you longtime listeners might remember me talking about my friend who owns a few sweatshops. That's what they call them here in Latin America, the common vernacular, but they really aren't. In fact, over the years, he's owned and operated a dozen of them, from Honduras to Jamaica, Guatemala, Salvador, Mexico, even in the Middle East. He's owned and operated maquilas throughout the world. And after all that, what country do you think he likes the best and where he's finally settled and still has a couple of those businesses? Why, Guatemala City, of all places, smack dab on the U.S. State Department's list. Now, usually I take my expat insider seminar group to see him at one of his factories, and he gives a little spiel for around an hour, telling the good, bad, ugly, and the great about his own life and his experiences in Latin America and why he ended up in Guatemala, of all places. Even though he's got the dough and the brains to live anywhere in the world. By the way, he's half Canadian and half New Yorker. And while he's giving his little spiel to my group, I always say, Mr. J, can you explain what you own personally and what your expenses are? In other words, give us a kind of a rough idea of what your cost of living is. Now, remember, my buddy, Mr. J, lives the high life. In the States, you'd call it upper middle class to wealthy. And here's the breakdown. He's got a 5,000-plus square foot luxury home in Guatemala City with 3 full-time maids and a full-time gardener. He's got a very nice beach house right on the Pacific Ocean that he visits maybe once or twice a month. And he's got a small auxiliary little house on the property where a couple lives, the gardener slash maintenance guy and his wife, who's the maid, and when they come for their weekends, she's the cook and all that too. So in all, he's got 6, count them, 6 full-time employees. Of course, he's married, he's got a wife, and he's got a kid too, who's around 14 years old and goes to the most expensive helicopter school in all of Central America, and probably all of Latin America too. He pays about 1,500 bucks a month for that school. About 10 grand a year, because there's a 9-month school year. He admits he could have sent his kid to a lot cheaper helicopter school that would be just as good in every way. I believe his kid's in 9th grade right now. Anyway, he says he could send his kid to an equivalent school for around maybe 300 to 500 bucks a month, but he said he'd rather pay the 1,500 a month because all the entitled little rich kids at that school have parents who are extremely wealthy and connected in politics, business. They're the Latin American movers and shakers. So in a way, it's a Latin version of an Ivy League school. It's not about the education, but the connections that you make. For example, a person might graduate from Harvard with a useless MBA, and as soon as he walks out, he instantly gets a job for $120,000 because his roommate's dad owned a brokerage firm. Meanwhile, a similar guy at Texas A&M gets his MBA and is even smarter than the original guy at Harvard, and if he's lucky, he gets a job quickly, maybe working at H&R Block for maybe 60 grand a year. So that's my buddy's reasoning, and it's very sound reasoning here in Latin America why he sends his kid to the most expensive helicopter school around. But where were we? Oh yeah, cost of living for my buddy Mr. J and his family. Let's see, he's got 3 nice cars, 2 houses, a nice beach house, and the other one pretty much a mansion. They live a very nice upscale life, go out quite a bit to eat and such. And get this, he even sends the kids of his maids to school. No, not a helicopter school like he does for his own kid, but a nice, basic, inexpensive private school, which is much better than any of the crappy old public schools that don't even have consistent electric power or even running water. So then you might ask, what's a low-end private school like that cost? Well, around 100 bucks a month. That's quite a huge spread compared to the 1,500 he's paying for his kid. But remember, 100 bucks a month is about a third of a month's salary for the average Latin worker, which is why about 90% of all the kids in Latin America go to those crummy, cheap government schools. Why? Because they're free. Now, admittedly, he owns his main house and beach house outright, so he pays no rent. But he has nice cars, first-rate car insurance and health care insurance. That's everything you have up in the first world, and more. In the end, when you add it all up, utilities, cell phones, internet, food, dining, 6 full-time employees, the total, from the horse's mouth, 60 grand a year. 60. I'll say it again, 60 grand a year. And that, by the way, is one of the main reasons I bring my expat insider seminar group to meet him, so he can explain how the upper crust, so-called high rollers, live. Of course, we're talking about living off the gringo tourist trail here. And on the trail, it will probably cost half again as much as Mr. J's example. So that means, as far as the average expat, gonna be or wannabe, coming down with a wife and a kid. Although, in most instances, as far as bringing a kid down, that's not the usual case. People come down here as singles or couples. Very few kids are in on the deal. Usually they're still going to university up in the States or are out on their own. But hypothetically speaking, just imagine a husband, a wife, and a kid come down and live in a very nice area in a big Latin city or outside a Latin city. They have, let's say, a full-time maid and a gardener, but no beach house. Not yet, anyway. That might come in the future. Who knows? Anyway, in that case, to live a nice first-world life, it's hard to imagine they'd spend more than 30 grand a year. Meanwhile, that kind of dough, 30 grand a year, up in the States, will get you the kind of lifestyle that would certainly include daily rations of mac and cheese, cat food, and hamburger helper. By the way, here's a question. Do you know anyone up in the States who has a full-time live-in maid? If you do, that person, the boss, is certainly rich. Or at least their income is in the upper 1%, something like $250,000 a year or more. And still, 250 G's a year just might not be enough to be able to comfortably afford a full-time live-in maid. Because remember, whatever you make, you're pretty much in a 50% tax bracket, what with all the hundreds of taxes you pay each year, most of them out of sight, out of mind, like licensing fees, utility taxes, property taxes, gas taxes, etc. So even if you make 250 grand a year, which sounds like a nice hefty sum, right? Chances are you don't bring home any more than 150 grand a year. And to have a full-time maid, that'll cost you at least 30 to 40 G's extra a year. And if she's on the books, which is likely, you'll be paying health care, Social Security, unemployment insurance, and because she's a live-in maid, you'll be paying room and board too. That means in total you'll be shelling out at least 40 grand a year, probably 50. Of course, we're talking stateside now. So really, even at 250 G's a year, it would be a stretch to think you could comfortably afford a maid. So again, I'll ask the question, do you know anyone who's got a full-time live-in maid? Well, maybe some of you do, but do you know anyone who's got 2, 3, 4, 5, or even 6 full-time domestic employees? If you do, surely you're talking about someone who makes well over $1 million a year and probably has 3 or 4 vacation homes and properties too. Maybe even a jet or a helicopter. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Sports, fitness, and golfing, tennis, boxing, etc. All right, first, let's talk about health clubs. Yep, they're everywhere. And there are a lot of very high-end health clubs, too. These days, you'll find all prices and varieties of different health clubs in small, medium, and large Latin cities. But the high-end ones that are totally American-style, like those Gold's Gym or World Gym clones, they're almost always in or very near a high-end luxury mall. As far as the very high-end gyms, which can cost up to $50 a month if you're paying by the month, with a 10 or 20% discount if you pay 6 months up front or a year, the thing is, if you walk into one of those places, that's where you're going to see the helicopter and bodyguard crowd. Just check out the parking lot and look for those dark-colored SUVs with heavily tinted windows and guys in suits with earbuds that don't work, and you'll know what I mean. All right, so that's what you find in the high-end districts. But even in the middle-class and lower-middle-class districts, they have plenty of health clubs, too. And surprisingly enough, some of them are very well-equipped, and they're not dank, rough, and scruffy around the edges, as you might imagine. Though, of course, as with any gym, even up in the States, the older they are, the scruffier they seem to be. And as expat Eddie says, they all start smelling like fresh ass eventually. Ew. And the odd thing is, you could find a very nice, new, well-equipped gym in a middle or lower middle-class district that's just as nice as any gym in a high-end district, of course, without those stuck-up gringo wannabe women in their designer clothes, and of course, no bodyguards and such, for half the price or less than the ones in the high-end districts. So if you go to a health club where the bodyguard crowd hangs out, you might pay $40 or $50 a month. And for pretty much exactly the same thing, in a middle-class or working-class area, $20 or maybe $25 a month, with 20% off if you pay 6 months or a year ahead. Problem is, those middle and lower middle-class districts are quite dingy and scruffy and frankly depressing. Though the gym in the area, if it's relatively new, could be absolutely first class. So for health clubs, just like real estate, it's location, location, location. Oh, and another thing you'll find with those very high-end health clubs, there'll be times when the place is absolutely empty. The truth is, people who have memberships in health clubs located in lower middle class and middle class areas, they're much more serious about working out. Why? Because they have less disposable income, and if they're going to buy a gym membership, man, they're going to use it. Whereas wealthy people will join health clubs and use them very sporadically, only because it's all the fashion to join, and it's a place to see and be seen. Although there's that 2 to 5% of people who join things like health clubs who are deadly serious about it, so-called fitness addicts, which is exactly how golf memberships work here in Latin America, and they've got great golf courses too. And the nice thing is, unlike courses in America, they're almost always empty. Because for the wealthy, it's the fashionable thing to do. It's the gringo thing to do. That is, get a membership as bragging rights, whether you golf or not. Do note, there are no public golf courses in Latin America. They're all private. So there's a membership fee, and that instantly cuts out the lower middle classes, and most of even the upper middle classes. So it's mostly the Latin wealthy gringo wannabes who get golf club memberships. Again, it's about the bragging rights and to see and be seen. So it's true. If you come down to Latin America, you'll have no trouble finding a golf course nearby. So what about those membership fees? I've heard anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000. Then after you're in, you pay a perpetual monthly maintenance fee. And as mentioned, they're not open to the public, so how does a gringo without a membership or a Latin friend with a membership and guest privileges golf there? Well, oddly enough, that's where your gringo advantage kicks in, because you could pretty much walk up to any clubhouse and say, look, I'm thinking about getting a membership here. Can I go out and hack 18? And guess what? They'll usually say, go ahead, no problem, but you'll have to pay a guest fee. I know a few gringos who do that repeatedly. Or you can do what lots of gringo golf enthusiasts do when they move down to Latin America. They rent a membership by the month, because with each course, there is a long list of Latins who are members fully paid up, but they never golf. Isn't that funny? And you know, most nice golf courses, like the ones up in the States, they have homes and townhouses and condos around them, and if you buy one, you automatically get a membership. And you listeners who have country club memberships up in the States know that you have a hefty monthly fee. It could be up to $500 a month, whether you use the course or not. It's a maintenance fee, and it's perpetual. Aha. So people in Latin America who bought condos or houses on golf courses and have memberships and they don't golf, guess what they'll do? They'll rent out those memberships strictly to cover their maintenance fee. And you know, these owners, they may have plenty of dough, they may be rich, but they still got to dig into their pockets every month and pay a fee for something they just don't use. They're paying for a dead horse, so to speak. In fact, a great example of exactly that was when good old John Gold, a terrific golfer who went to university on a golf scholarship, came down looking for a golf course. In fact, he came to one of my very first Latin Insider seminars and he said, Johnny, where's the golf course? And he found a spectacular one called La Reunion, happened to be the one that got buried by the volcano a couple of months ago. But for years, he rented a membership for $250 a month from some old rich Latin lady who owned a townhouse on the course and therefore had a full membership, but she didn't golf. What else is new? And her membership, available for rent, was snapped up by John Galt for $250 a month. And you know, every time good old John Galt talked about that deal he made with that old lady, he'd just shake his head in disbelief. He'd say, no one's ever going to believe this back home. Man, to have this kind of deal in the States, I'd be paying $2,000 a month for sure. Plus, the initial membership fee. And for a course like this, he said at least $100,000. Oh, by the way, do you want to hear a golf story about me? You know, way back when I was a kid in the burbs of Chicago, we lived just two or three blocks from a nice nine-hole municipal golf course. And during the summertime, that 3 or 4 months we had off of school, our parents would just shove us out of the house in the morning and say, come back for lunch, and if you eat lunch at one of your friend's house, be home by dark. You could do that back then, but these days, social services will come in and take the kids away and put the parents in counseling. Anyway, it just so happened there was this municipal golf course a couple blocks from my house, and every summer day, it started when I was around 8 years old, my mom would give me 35 cents and send me out to the golf course. Because the golf course had a deal going, if you were 12 or under, you could play for 35 cents. Now, in today's funny money, with inflation, probably be more like $3 to $5. Anyway, with six kids in the family, there was no money for golf clubs, but my mom had a ladies' set that she bought with S&H green stamps. Remember those? They were little stamps you'd get when you go to the grocery store and gas station. If you filled enough books, you can redeem them for products like toasters and corn poppers, luggage, baseball gloves, etc. So anyway, all summer, for years, I'd go golfing practically every day, unless it was raining. And best yet, usually I'd get to keep the 35 cents. Why? Because one of my sisters worked as a cashier and receptionist at the clubhouse. How convenient for me, huh? For her, it was a summer job in the city, and for me, it was like Christmas every day. Because not only could I golf for free, she was in charge of the food counter, too. Come on, how cool was that for a little kid? Like winning the lottery every day. So anyway, as luck and time would have it, I became a very good golfer. Tall and lean as I was, I could kill the ball and was very good on the long putt game, too. In fact, I was so good when I was 12 years old, I won the citywide tournament for kids of my age. And then in high school, I was in line for a golf scholarship, but I took the engineering one instead, even though my buddies were all pissed off. You know, when you're young and stupid and in high school, you get a lot of pressure from your buddies. And going to school on a golf scholarship, man, that was cool. Engineering, boring, 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 and worse, most likely, little or no female contact. That's what engineering school was all about back then. But I wasn't too much concerned with that because I played nights in a rock and roll band. Man, I'll tell you, playing in a rock and roll band does wonders for an engineering student's social life. Anyway, being that I was kind of a golf hotshot at a young age, and kids, especially older kids, like to challenge me, I'll never forget this one guy. His name was Carl Sharfinski, a big old bruiser bully. A couple years older than me, was in my foursome one day. I was around 12 years old. I was whooping his ass, and as we came around to the ninth hole, he took my set of clubs and threw them in the creek. My mom's clubs, no less. And by the way, I was never embarrassed that I was using ladies' clubs. I was just happy to have clubs. So I fished him out, got all muddy, went home crying, told my mom and dad what happened. My mom made my dad call his dad. Back then, you just looked up names in the phone book. My dad phoned his old man up, and guess what? About an hour later, a car pulls up. A big old Polish bruiser, this guy's dad, gets out of the car, and he's about 6'4", 250 pounds, all muscle. He drags his big bruiser kid, Carl, out of the car, comes up to the front door with his hand in a vice grip on the back of his own kid's neck, makes him apologize, and then proceeds to kick the crap out of his own kid right in my front yard. And by then, all the neighbors were watching. Hey, back then, that's the kind of stuff that happened in Chicago neighborhoods. But the problem was, you see, I knew someday I'd see him again and was really afraid of what he was going to do to me next. And I did run into him again at the golf course a couple weeks later. Thinking for sure I was going to pay the price, he actually said hi and didn't threaten me at all. So I figure he was much more afraid of his dad than he was interested in getting even. Oh, and back then when people said, why didn't you take that golf scholarship? Well, I knew I wasn't that great and that I'd probably end up in a pro shop selling ugly plaid pants and giving lessons to fat rich guys and their wives. That's the thing, I knew I was good, but not quite good enough to be in the money. Plus, I'm not big on sports, so my heart wasn't really in it. Which just goes to show you really could be good at something and not necessarily like it. Again, it's all about that 10,000 hour thing. You've heard about that, right? Meaning practically with any skill you want to develop, if you put 10,000 hours or more into it, you can't help but be in the top 1%. That includes playing the piano, guitar, fixing cars, plumbing, writing, painting, blowing glass, whatever. For example, you hear stories about people like Jimi Hendrix sitting for 6 hours a day every day in his basement playing his guitar. He got his 10,000 hours in, all right. So whatever you do, if you put 10,000 hours into it, you'll be in the top 1%, though you might not be the absolute best at it. For example, Jimi Hendrix was considered the very best of all on electric guitar, not only for his 10,000 hours, but for his creative mind. But what people don't realize is that his fingers were half again as long as the average person's. Check out one of his videos sometime. Same as many of the great pianists, they have extra long fingers. But I digress as usual. Man, did I digress. Sorry about that. All right, so in that original email, JW said, what about personal trainers in Latin America? He says he pays like $60 an hour, or
He doesn't want to pay $60 an hour. It's too expensive. Well, I can tell you this for a fact. All the major health clubs in Latin America have a few fitness trainers on hand, and much of the time they'll help you out for nothing. But it's a preferential macho kind of system. Turns out, if you happen to be one of the better-looking ladies, you'll get a lot of extra personal trainer attention. This is a macho society, you know. And, of course, you can't opt to make a deal with a trainer and get personal attention every time you come into the gym. And that costs anywhere from $5 to $20 an hour, depending how you negotiate your deal. Oh, and here's something that always makes me laugh. When I walk into one of the gyms and see the personal trainers helping people out, man, just like in the States, these guys have perfect bodies. They're all cut up. Great definition, six-pack abs, the works. But as you get closer to one of these guys and see these things in perspective, suddenly you start to realize a lot of them are not much over 5 feet tall. So is it overcompensation for the short man syndrome that got him into fitness and training? Hey, sounds plausible to me. In fact, just the other day I was having a conversation with a nice-looking young Latin lady, and we're talking about what Latin women find attractive in men. And surprisingly enough, one of the top issues with her was a man's height. She said, for first impressions, it doesn't matter how good looking or how perfect the guy's body is. If he's shorter than she is, it's just not going to happen. And that's the way it is with most Latin women. Again, with the gringo advantage, huh? Now, you've heard me talk about this big-time obesity problem here in Latin America. So I brought that up to her, too. I said, what about dating men con panzones grandes? That's pot bellies. She said, you could always work on that, but you can't work on short. Then she said the people she really feels sorry for are very tall Latin women. They're rare, but sometimes you see a 5'10" or even 6' Latina. So as far as finding a compatible guy, they're SOL. They just have to settle for short because probably only 1 in 2,000 Latin guys is 6' tall. And as for you ladies, you gringas, how much weight do you put on the short issue when it comes to mating, dating, and romance? Because if you come down here to Latin America looking for love in all the wrong cantinas, chances are short, dark, and handsome is what you're going to end up with. And finally, JW says in his email, what about boxing and boxing gyms and rings and boxing competitions and events? Well, I'll tell you, most all gyms have boxing rings, and there are lots and lots of competitive events in all weight classes. And yes, believe it or not, even in the scruffiest parts of town, the gyms themselves are absolutely safe. And you know, some of the greatest world-class boxers come from Latin America. You know, the macho Camacho types and all that. So whether you like competing yourself or just watching, there are no shortages of boxing events in any Latin city.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!